Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. Boris Johnson's trip in America continues. James, Boris Johnson's meeting with Joe Biden later today. What do we expect to be on the agenda?
Well, I think Joe Biden has in some ways set the agenda already. We've had his speech to the UN General Assembly and he's announced that the US is doubling its contribution to climate finance, which makes it much more likely that you'll be able to get to that $100 billion of climate finance from rich nations by COP26. I think this has been a big UK concern, you know, that Boris Johnson has spoken about it very publicly on Monday, but that they weren't going to get to that sum of money, which would have made the chance of getting an agreement there even more difficult. So that's kind of tick one. Then obviously there is the continuing fallout from the UK, Australia, US deal. I think you'll expect them to, you know, to see them both kind of welcoming that, talking about it. You know, Biden in his speech just now at the UN General Assembly is talking about how the US doesn't want a new Cold War. The subtext of that might be that I think the US view would be that it is having one forced upon it and it is taking steps. And then, and as you've said yourself, Katie, that there'll obviously be the usual kind of watching of the dynamic between the two of them. I think one of the things that is often ignored is how, and you saw this at the G7, how keen Boris Johnson is to point not just to their kind of shared international outlook, but similarities in terms of their domestic agendas, you know, the big infrastructure spending, build back better, which, you know, Johnson has stolen from Biden as a slogan or borrowed. I think, I'm not sure who you coined it. You know, certainly wasn't Boris Johnson who coined it first, but I think someone had coined it before Joe Biden. And so on this goes, but I think that will be the dynamic of this meeting and also, you know, the satisfaction from Boris Johnson of getting to the White House. You know, UK prime ministers, however much they say that they are not needy and decry the term special relationship for that purpose, are always very keen to get an invitation to the White House.
And Isabel, when it comes to how Boris Johnson plans to find common ground with Joe Biden, we hear that the environment is one area, but we're also hearing about trains. So what do you think the number 10 approach is?
Yeah, so he told journalists who were on his specially repainted plane that one of the things they both had in common was that they are train nuts, which is nice. Perhaps they can paint some trains together like he likes to paint buses in his spare time. But he didn't have clarity yet on the brand of toothpaste, which is a reference to Tony Blair and George W. Bush using the same brand of toothpaste, which is one of those political facts which is really completely useless.
I think it was just cheating, though. Wasn't it that because Blair was staying at Camp David, Bush knew that the toothpaste provider in all the guest bedrooms was Colgate, and so said this, and everyone took it to mean a kind of greater level of whitening bonding.
Superficial special relationship. But there is this anxiety about showing that, and Boris Johnson doesn't like using the phrase special relationship, but he is still keen to show that the relationship between Downing Street and the White House is strong and that the leaders are able to have frank discussions and that there's a lot for them to try to resolve as well in terms of awkwardness over Afghanistan in particular. That's been a very difficult episode for the two countries working together or not working together on, and also just an attempt to show that Biden actually listens to Boris Johnson as well, I think.
And James, let's talk about that UK-US trade deal. We used to hear quite a lot about it, particularly during the EU referendum campaign. Under Liz Truss, while Trump was in the White House, there was an effort to get things moving. But Boris Johnson didn't sound very positive on the prospect when he was speaking from New York.
I've long thought that the prospects of a US-UK trade deal are overstated. When Trump was in the White House, any deal with him, I think, would have been politically so difficult that it would have encountered huge opposition here. The Biden administration, I think, is going to do very little on trade before the midterms. And I think when it does do on trade, I don't think that a UK deal is going to be its kind of first priority. I think the more interesting question is what happens with CPTPP. The UK, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The UK has applied to join this. And this was one of Liz Truss's big things as Trade Secretary. Part of the way China has responded to the AUKUS deal is to also apply to join CPTPP, because although the US played a huge role in negotiating it, Donald Trump pulled the US out of it. I've always thought that the UK government's real aim in terms of getting a trade deal with the US is to get into CPTPP and then have the US also join CPTPP, if I carry on saying my P's, and but that would provide the basis for US-UK trade, but it wouldn't require you to negotiate all that. And the other point about the US-UK trade deal is, it is worth remembering that the UK is largely a services economy, and lots of the service trade provisions are actually at a state level. So you can sign some headline US-UK trade deal, but then you would find that a US insurance company trying to sell into North Carolina, for example, could find, oh no, North Carolina's state regulations don't allow this. I've actually thought that kind of the smarter UK trade policy towards the US is work on CPTPP and also try and do and negotiate state by state access for UK financial services to those individual state markets. Those state markets are, in terms of financial services, are huge. They are equivalent to those provided by many mid-sized countries.
James, let's look to Labour conference. Keir Starmer has proposed a change to the way party leaders are elected, meaning ballots for members will only count for a third of the overall votes. Do you think Keir Starmer is in a strong enough position to do that, to say it's our way or the highway? Because we have seen his authority as a leader undermined in recent months, particularly since the local elections when he had that botched shadow cabinet reshuffle.
Yeah, I think this is kind of classic, slightly pick a fight with your own party to define yourself. I think there's an irony in that, you know, those of us of a certain vintage will remember when one member, one vote was a great cause of Labour modernisers. You know, you wanted to kind of dilute the influence of the electoral college. Now, obviously, that's not how things have turned out. I think Keir Starmer needs to get noticed. I think the biggest problem for Keir Starmer is how little you would be aware of him if you just pick up your news from, you know, a set of morning headlines on the radio. You don't spend a huge amount of time thinking about politics. What would you know about Keir Starmer? And Keir Starmer has been leader now for quite some time. Obviously, some of this is the problems of COVID. You know, it's probably the first time he's delivered a leader speech to a conference hall with delegates actually in it. But I think this is part of him trying to seek definition, and also part of him seeking to shore himself up against any kind of speculative challenge to his leadership. Although I don't think anyone serious is yet ready to go against him. But I think this is part of that movement. But I think the bigger question for Keir Starmer is, where is he going to get relevance with the public? Because right now, I think there is a problem for him, which is, you know, when you're writing a story, or partly this is a function of the Tories having a majority, the more interesting story is, oh, you know, can Boris Johnson carry the Tory party with him on this or that? If he can, then he's going to be all right. And it was almost, you saw this almost with the national insurance rights, where the news was almost more interested in where Tory MPs stood on this question than where Keir Starmer stood on this question.
Isabel, do you think that Keir Starmer has anything to worry about in terms of his position as leader?
I'm not sure whether it's his position, but I think it's his authority, which is still an issue. And a lot of MPs who I've been speaking to over the past few days have been trying to work out particularly what Angela Rayner is going to use conference to do, whether she's going to use it to launch her own platform a little bit more, or whether she's going to have a show of unity for the leader, which I think is probably, if we do have a show of leader, it will be fulsome in the actual sense of the word. It may not be fully sincere. So there's that. I think also he needs to win this fight with the left, obviously, because otherwise he's picked a fight himself that he then loses is going to be a real issue for him.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.